Being with us. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Anjali Kamat, Tammy Woronoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, Dennis Moynihan, Safwat Mazal. Our executive directors, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thank you.
Puberty is when you grow into your adult body, usually between 8 and 14 years old. All that growing brings changes that may make you feel scared, confused, excited, or all of the above. It's all good. You're just maturing. Puberty is a process that lasts years, hits differently for everybody, and can last till you're around 20. So how do the changes show up? You may get pimples, mostly on your face, but on your body too. Hair. The hair you have on your arms and legs may get thicker and darker, and you'll likely grow hair in new places, like your face, armpits, chest, and pubic area. Stretch marks are common too, a sign of your adult body taking shape. Physical changes, from body odor to growth spurts, are just part of the puberty story. All kinds of new feelings may come on too, like crushes and being sexually turned on. It's super common to feel like your emotions suddenly turn on and off, sad, angry, or irritated. No matter how you're feeling about all these changes to your body, remember that puberty is a normal part of growing up, and knowing what to expect can help to make it feel a lot less weird or stressful. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. And we are pleased to announce moments ago the spacecraft Dragon Freedom landed safely in the Gulf of Mexico. That's right, it landed in the Gulf of Mexico. Everybody knows where the Gulf of Mexico is. There's no confusion about that. In fact, our USB crack news team was right on site and caught the sound of the spacecraft hitting the water. And that is indeed what it sounded like. Prove me wrong. It's 6:01, time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this glorious Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, I'll be right back. I have
You literally just ran in.
Well, there's a space capsule. I'll be right back.
Yeah, okay, all right. Somehow we're in charge of the space capsule. I don't know what happened exactly, but yeah, it's down safely in the Gulf of Mexico, in case you missed that. And, you know, we were watching the NASA TV coverage, which is really, it can be a lot of fun sometimes. And I noticed that nobody said Gulf of America. Yeah, and it's landing right there in the Gulf of Mexico, which is the proper name. You just know Trump is going to get bent out of shape over that. So I can hardly wait. They'll be climbing out of that capsule soon. And these are the astronauts that were stranded up there for like 9 months or something. So I imagine they're going to be quite happy to get back home. And who knows what they're going to be doing next, but wish them well. Yeah, and this is the whole SpaceX, NASA collaboration there. A lot of fun. Okay, so local news. Some fun things are happening that just happened, actually, yesterday. State Supreme Court judge in Riverhead yesterday ordered the Shinnecock Indian Nation's leaders to immediately cease all construction work at the tribe's half-finished gas station / travel plaza along Sunrise Highway in Hampton Bays. The judge's decision granting a temporary restraining order requested by the town of Southampton also called into question a recent federal finding that the 80-acre Shinnecock Nation property on which the travel plaza is being built enjoyed special protected status as Aboriginal sovereign land. Yeah, I wouldn't count on that that federal support anymore, but this is going to be an interesting battle here. Now, the Shinnecock Nation obviously is going to appeal that ruling. Vice Chairman Lance Gumbs criticized the judge's ruling as failing to understand the tribe's status. She's not looking at this as if we are a government with our own laws and regulations. She's trying to incorporate us into the town and under town's jurisdiction, and we are not under the town's jurisdiction. We are a sovereign nation. And yeah, it's kind of in the name, you know, the Shinnecock Nation. So does Southampton have any right to tell them what to do? Well, Southampton seems to think so, and now they found a judge to say the same thing. So they haven't discussed how to enforce this as of yet, said James Burke, a lawyer for Southampton Town. He added that he'd reached out to the town and discussed with tribal lawyers the prospect of a separate agreement by which the nation and the town can move forward. The nation has previously ignored town-issued stop work orders. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, this is a case where they really have no jurisdiction. It's a sovereign nation. Now, unless you want to go back on treaties and it wouldn't be the first time. There's a real impasse here. Actually, it's not really an impasse. The town is just wrong. The state is wrong. I'm not in favor of a gas station or travel plaza. I don't think we need more of that, but it's their land. And, it's certainly not the town of Southampton's land. So we'll see where that goes. Yeah, so that's a case of a judge definitely not having jurisdiction. Now, there's another case in the news that you might have heard about where a certain Donald Trump is claiming that a court has no jurisdiction over his administration. Yeah. This in regards to people being deported to El Salvador. Lawyers for the Trump administration defended the weekend flights that deported hundreds of alleged Venezuelan gang members, despite a federal judge's order to turn those planes around. They just ignored the order. U.S. District Judge James Boasberg gave the Department of Justice a deadline of noon today to provide a sworn declaration with details on how plane loads of alleged members of the Venezuelan gang landed in El Salvador, hours after he issued emergency orders blocking the Trump administration from using wartime powers from the 1700s to immediately deport people. Yeah, they reached back and found a law in the 1700s that somehow they believe applies to this situation. Now, lawyers for the Justice Department complied, providing a sworn declaration that no individual deported after the judge's written order was removed under those wartime powers. But at the same time, the department struck a defiant note, insisting in a court filing that Boasberg had no justification to seek more information about two deportation flights that left the U.S. before his written order. DOJ lawyers also repeated some of the arguments they made at a hearing Monday, insisting they had not violated the court's written order because those flights had already left U.S. airspace, and that the court's earlier oral statements to turn around any planes already in the air were not independently enforceable as injunctions. Yeah, okay, you know what? I think they're trying to cover their asses, because what Trump has been saying recently, things like this: this radical left lunatic of a judge, a troublemaker and agitator who was sadly appointed by Barack Hussein Obama, didn't mention him by name, but said that this judge, like many of the crooked judges I am forced to appear before, should be impeached.
He would have a problem if God Almighty came down and judged him.
Oh, I want God Almighty to come down and judge him. Any God, any religion, please, just someone judge him. That statement, or that basic attitude that, yeah, this guy's a judge, but we don't have to follow his rule because we don't believe that he has any authority over us. Very different from what the Shinnecock Nation is claiming, because you can point to the facts that say they are a sovereign nation. But Donald Trump is not a sovereign citizen. Oh, now I get it. Now I see where those idiots come from. Okay, maybe he believes he is a sovereign citizen that has nobody telling him what to do. No checks or balances whatsoever. He actually believes that, for sure. But anyway, today there was what's considered to be a very rare statement from a Supreme Court Chief Justice, namely John Roberts, who said, "For more than two centuries, it has been established that impeachment is not an appropriate response to disagreement concerning a judicial decision. The normal appellate review process exists for that purpose." So that's a real smackdown of Donald Trump from John Roberts there. And that is what the courts are supposed to do, all right? They're supposed to oversee what's going on, weights and balances, countermeasures, things like that, when everybody is simply following orders and just walking in lockstep. That's when you have a very unhealthy society. So every time you see a judge saying, "Hold on now, wait a second, this let's think about this. Let's take some time and suspend this action while we look at the legalities of it," that's democracy in action. That is a good thing. All right. And even if it's ruling against you, you should be pleased that you get to go to court and argue your case. And you must respect the findings when they come out. And this administration does not do that. They do not respect anything that goes against them in any way. They don't respect people. They don't respect rulings. They don't respect existing law. If it doesn't fall into their master plan, well, then it's invalid. It's just wrong. You know, he actually went so far. I don't know if you heard about this one, Kyle. This is wackadoodle stuff here. He is claiming that Biden's pardons for the January 6th committee, not January 6th rioters, the committee investigating the rioters, Biden issued pardons for them. They didn't do anything wrong, but he issued pardons in case Trump, in his craziness, tried to charge them with something. And he was absolutely right to do that. People at the time said, Why? You know, I'm not even going to accept this. You know, Adam Kinzenberg, I believe, said that he didn't want to accept it, right?
Kinzenberg,
I'm sorry. Now I think he's realizing, yeah, it probably was a good idea to do that because Trump would have charged everybody who was in that room with some kind of a crime. Anyway, now he's gone one step beyond that. He claims that the pardons are void and vacant. He claimed that Biden's preemptive pardons of members of the January 6th Select Committee and others were void, vacant, and of no future force of effect. In a post to his crazy Truth Social network, he went on to say that members of that House committee are subject to investigation at the highest level and baselessly accuse them of being responsible for their own pardons, without Biden's knowledge. Stay with me here. I know it's crazy, but stay with me. Now, making his claim about the pardons, Trump cited alleged use of an auto pen during Biden's administration. Kyle, have you ever heard of an auto pen?
Yes.
I've never heard of this. What is an auto pen?
It's a tool for signing multiple things or automating the signature process.
Okay.
It's a very old instrument, but I'm sure there's modern equivalents. It's, I guess, akin to what people do in portable documents.
Yeah, when PDFs.
You e-sign, e-signature and stuff.
Except that's a real pain in the ass.
I think Sharpie is disqualifying, so there. Tell this SOB, dream on.
Well, if Crayon is disqualified, then Trump's right out immediately. But according to this story, AutoPen is a machine used to replicate signatures and has long been used by public figures, including presidents, to sign notes and letters. The AutoPen company, yeah, there's an AutoPen company. Okay, we have to contact them, Kyle. We have to get AutoPens. They make those devices. They said the machine is the oldest, most commonly used signing machine, and that it has been used for more than 60 years.
As I said, it's an old device.
Wow. Okay. And apparently it's been used for presidents in a very long time.
Yeah, it's like a mechanical thing that you use with one of your hands or with a template, I guess, of your signature, and it can mimic it. In other words,
how would Trump even know that he used an auto pen?
At least that was the early version. I don't know what the modern ones are. I don't know. I think hearsay or wild fantasy or DMT trip he was on. Whatever. I don't know what is in his Diet Coke.
All right. So he's actually saying that, in other words, Joe Biden did not sign them, but more importantly, he did not know anything about them. Okay, where are you getting that from? You're just making wild accusations. All it takes is Biden saying, yeah, I knew about them. And then what's he going to say then? That, no, Biden didn't know what he was just saying. He's being programmed by a remote alien someplace. And don't listen to him. It's okay. So anyway, the aforementioned former Rep. Adam Kinzinger, who served on the House Select Committee, Republican too, responded to Trump's claim and challenged Trump to bring it on. He said the president is obsessed with him and former Representative Liz Cheney, who also served on the committee. He's more obsessed with me and Liz Cheney than his freaking golf score. Hey, Trump, bring it on, dude, you weak, whiny, tiny man. Wow. Well, that's good. That's good. I like to see people fighting back. But can you believe that? You know, it's a pardon, a presidential pardon, and he's trying to override that.
And the thing that's especially galling or just kind of makes me chuckle is the like technicalities under from his view are all disqualifying. But when anyone brings any kind of technical issue with his kind of mad decision making process or claims, they're the problem. He's like full of double standards and hypocrisies, and I find that very easy to dismiss him as a credible leader because of that kind of behavior. And it just doesn't really, I just feel like all of his pardons, like all of the perpetrators of January 6th, like let's forget about the investigation of it, the committee, like let's go through all of his pardons of them. I mean, his will, both spoken and in signing a pardon, was just as clear as Biden's. And to say that Biden is mentally or otherwise wasn't at the helm, I'm sorry, honey, but you're a little cuckoo too, and that could easily be levied in your direction. So go swing your golf club, but you're threats are a turn on to these people. Like, wow. They're getting excited by you targeting them. Listen to Adam Kinzinger. He wants it. Mm-hmm. Let's go. I don't want to use any more derogatory insinuation, but I absolutely think like this, you're coming on to him.
All right. Enough of this. It's going to take all night to get these images out of my head. I just wish Democrats would fight as strongly as Republicans do for what they stand for. In this particular case, you're seeing Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger standing up for themselves forcefully. I want to see more of that from Democrats. What Chuck Schumer did last week was atrocious. Caving in to the Republicans on their disgusting budget and basically co-signing onto all the massive cuts and suffering that that's going to bring. Yeah, I know a government shutdown would be bad, but you're basically saying, okay, we'll accept this bad in place of that bad, when you shouldn't be accepting any bad at all. You should be fighting every last bit of it, you know, and at least, you know, okay, so fight for a little while, you know. If you cave later on, okay, at least you stood up to something. Maybe get some concessions. Maybe, you know, draw a line in the sand. But this guy got absolutely nothing. Schumer got absolutely nothing, just basically caved immediately. I'm really getting sick of Democrats and their spinelessness. Yeah, they sing songs on the Capitol Hill steps, and they hold little paddles that say lies during the State of the Union, or whatever that speech was called. You know, you got to do something more. Look, in Serbia, in Belgrade, 325,000 people showed up in the streets because of a little corruption. I don't mean to demean it, but because of we have a lot more corruption here. I'm sorry, Serbia, if you want to take us on, we have a lot more corruption, a lot more bad things going on, and we can't get a dozen people to show up. It's ridiculous. And yeah, I know that's not Congress. That's us. That's the citizens. We bear responsibility, too. After all, we voted these people in.
No, we have an ungodly amount of corruption. This entire country is a tax haven. Just sit with that. Ugh. Sit with that. We're among the worst of all of them. And the things that people get away with, criminal, it makes the legal statutes a joke. The entirety of our federal statute, they're tongue-in-cheek, as far as I'm concerned. There is as real as the Ten Commandments on tablets to a non-believer, right? Like, it's bonkers. Mm-hmm. And my problem, though, and I foresaw this after the election, even, like, in subcultures with that are technical communities, and then now the larger sort of, okay, Democrats, okay, opposition, get out in the streets. Like, we were, and I don't mean that as literally as in Serbia, but the call to action, and what I've always said is that the way you affect things nonviolently in this country is participate in the process, do more than the lobbyists, or at least play the game. In technical terms, I talk about it as a system. It is a system. So, taking a baseball bat to a computer is not mastering that system. So play a better game, run, learn the system, run it, run other things, run outside of the parameters that the strictures that are so laughable, innovate and try novel things if you're not getting results from what you always do. But at this point, I do agree that, I don't entirely agree, or I feel as though... many of us from the Democratic Party that you're assailing, and I understand where you're coming from. I'm with you. I hear you. I understand it. Independence, smug or not, I get it. But it takes much more awareness and much better leadership. And Chuck Schumer, like the old guard, the elderly guard in the Democratic side of things, has got to do some soul searching and stop pointing at their constituents to solve things. Mm-hmm. Like they need to have wider strategy. They need to show us what kind of messaging is required. And I get the okay, now we're at the effect of being losers, so everybody get in the streets. That's fine. That's like people coming again to technical people and saying, okay, now you all solve this, like we can just reboot this whole system, or like hacking, or like some sort of systems level diagnostic thing is gonna change it up. No, like it is its own. The political system is how it is, and it works in certain ways. And for the amount of money that lobbying and PACs accrued on either side to have these kind of results and let media consolidated media organizations run off with your ad money and not have a war chest for contingencies and for other strategies and to do better than just crappy social media posts. I don't think getting everybody out in the streets to baseball bat the political system and is the way to do it. I do think we do have to have action. We do have to have protest, but I'm profoundly annoyed that after a result like this, the politicians throw up their hands and do all this softball stuff. A lot of them, the leadership, let's say, like worse, on par with McConnell. Like McConnell would at least have everybody on side. This is like total BS. So to then throw your hands up and be like, okay, you guys go and like take the beanbags and the rubber bullets for us and cough up a lung on some gas. Like, come on. That is not a winning strategy. And it's not my fault. It's not my problem. You got my votes. You got the support. There was we talked ad nauseum on the radio and many others in the media did as well. Just do not get me started. I'm already started and you don't want me to keep going.
No, we only have an hour, but I just think it's, you know, Chuck Schumer can't really do any soul searching because he's done. I think he's done. I don't think he's capable of acting any differently than he has already acted, period.
Then toss him out of office.
That's what I'm saying.
Kick his old behind to the curb.
That's what I'm saying it's time for. And I do think it's time for people to go into the streets because that is the only thing that seems to work. Look, we cannot rely on our elected officials to take leadership here. I wish we could, but look at who we have. You know, there are a few. There are some good people out there, but they're dwarfed by all the people who simply care about being reelected. It's time for some anger. It's time for some passion. You know, we're talking about what happened in Belgrade because 325,000 people showed up. And you better believe that scares the crap out of the leadership there. And we need to scare the crap out of the leadership here if we're going to expect any change.
But breeding disunity with the opposition party at a moment like this, a time of, I would say, national crisis, is a bad strategy. You need a healthy, cohesive opposition party to combat the hegemonic winners.
I agree.
Winners.
But that party is not the Democrats. Not now. It. I wish it were. I really do wish it were. You know, maybe it can be resuscitated. Maybe some passion can be injected into it. But right now, it's pathetic.
Okay, so the anarchists and the provocateurs, they're going to solve all this.
I don't want to say that.
But you are.
But who's left? Who is left, Kyle? There's.
So we have to take it in the teeth?
We are taking it in the teeth. For God's sake, look around.
No, but literally. Because that's what's going to happen. This will get riot police and National Guardsmen on site in a heartbeat.
Isn't this what we are saying, what we have been saying for the last couple of years at least?
Not my job.
Okay, fine, but
that
doesn't solve the problem.
There needs to be better leadership. We voted for who we voted for.
And okay,
what do you expect?
And you're just going to keep having elections and voting for bland people that don't do anything? Because that's what I see happening.
I don't vote for bland people.
But enough people do, or they've gerrymandered enough so that your vote doesn't count.
I just do not think it is a time to just throw up our hands and say, okay, let's stop participating.
Oh, I didn't say
and
that.
Let's try burning everything down.
You are misreading me. I did not say stop participating.
All right.
I said we have to do more. For instance, Saturday there's a big demonstration outside the Tesla showroom in Smithtown. Route 111 and 347, you know where it is. You know, big demonstration there against fascism, against what Elon Musk has been doing, against all the crap that's been happening since the beginning of this year. We have to speak up because our elected officials are not doing the job, so we have to, initiate it. And I'm not saying, burn down the dealership, although, that's preferable to targeting innocent people who are driving Teslas. It's not their fault that they bought a Tesla years ago. And I don't really care about property damage, But I do care about people being intimidated or hurt. And I definitely not preaching that kind of thing. But, you know, anything that hurts Elon Musk, yeah, you know what? That's not a bad thing. That is not bad at all. You need to send a message that this kind of crap is not going to be tolerated. And we will defend our democracy, period.
I think that is in the works. I'm resistant to being put upon for more of my life. Not that I am a big, like, personally, I'm not out there as, I'm not doing everything I could possibly do. Yes, I could spend every waking minute, but I have a day job.
Yeah, but you'd be a lunatic if you did that.
And I have priorities, I have responsibilities, and a support network that needs me, and many other lovely things in my free time that I don't get to do because I'd be out there getting my face beat in.
Can we both sit down now and just calmly go over some of the other things that are happening now? For instance, there is some backlash to the budget now because Long Island, and this is a fact, they've lost $111 million earmarked for Long Island projects. Yeah. Now, this is just hilarious, the way this is being presented. Representative Andrew Gabarino is a Republican from Bayport. Won approval of 8 projects totaling nearly $32 million. Including $15.5 million for improving Islip Road. But he voted for the spending bill that eliminated those very things that he got. Yeah, while I am disappointed that an agreement was not reached to include community project funding, I'm proud to have secured more than $65 million in CPF requests for New York 02 during my time in Congress. Well, guess what, Andrew? You didn't, because you voted against it and now it's gone. So you don't get credit for that. Same thing for our esteemed Representative Nick LaLota, member of the House Appropriations Committee. His biggest earmark was for $10 million to replace the Montauk Highway Bridge. He voted for the spending bill. So yeah, Nick, sorry, but you voted against your own efforts. You don't get credit for that because it doesn't exist. He did not respond to a request for comment. It's madness. It is absolute madness what these people are doing.
Yeah, and it's too late for a lot of us. Like I said, we've other priorities. We have things in our lives we need to be doing that take precedent over this. And a lot of it, increasingly, is because of the disintegration of many of the services and many of the things that are the consequences of this faulty administration. We are going to be at the effect of it, so people are having to, whatever, stockpile food or brace themselves for medical calamity when they run out of coverage.
Buy champagne now.
Yeah, I mean, I've got many cases of bubbly just right there, ready to go. I mean, well, wait, that's not quite necessary, but my point is that it's important. I mean, it's too late for some of us. Some of us do not have the time to sit, you know, and be bailed out of jail. We don't have bail money, let alone bill money. So, ooh, that's good. It's too late. Like, I've been a voter. I've been participating in Democratic politics for a very long time. I've done all of it. Tried to, you know, been moved in one way or the other. Tried to vote for the good, the moral, the thing that's right for many others. This is it. My future has been sold out in many ways by a lot of companies and a lot of conservative interests, by their religious righteousness and amorality, by war making. I've had peers commit suicide coming home from tours of duty. I have been at the effect of a lot of crap. I'm just tired of worrying about it. I'm beleaguered of all of this. I would like to get back to my own life and live in a functional society.
Well, I think you speak for many people, because I hear this a lot. I hear this frustration. But what's interesting to me is that I'm hearing it from both sides now. You know, before it was basically, you know, people who are more progressive or on the left side. But now I'm hearing it from people who are conservative, people who actually voted for this administration because they're hurting too. And that's all it takes, is to see how you're hurting, how you're suffering because of these crazy decisions that are being made, decisions that make no sense. Why are we starting a war with Canada Why are we trying to take over Greenland and isolating Europe and not supporting Ukraine? Why? It doesn't make any sense. It's not what people voted for. So, you know, I think in this particular case, there's a tremendous opportunity to at least reach out to those people that I think made a big mistake, that maybe realize they made a big mistake, because that's the power you need.
Oh, and this is the ultimate icing on the cake. I mean, this is a true test of patience, a true test of, like, how centered you are as a human, a democratic constituent, that those from the conservatives... I grew up in a conservative household. And in fact, it was way more conservative than I ever realized. In fact, you know, many years on now, I realize it more and more and more every single day. I mean, I had cool folks, but, like, it was very conservative. And even I have to check my own behaviors that are instilled, like, feelings of shame or feelings of ingrained social norms, just being so nice or, like, you know, kind to others, little, like, you know, friendly things we expect in society. And I've found, like, the strength and the ability to sort of put aside your self-righteousness and do what you said, welcome in people and say, like, look, you may, it is the icing on the cake that they would appeal to us, or that they would be so upset that they're voicing that. And I'm happy that they're doing that, but to be in a position where you really want to scream, I told you so, at them, like till their eyelids and, like, skin comes off their head. Mm-hmm. It is a test, and an utter unbelievable test of patience, mm-hmm. to say, okay, now's the time to be magnanimous and friendly and kind, and yes, we'll do this together, and we'll all represent America.
I'm not going to say it like that, but, you know, I do believe in strength in numbers, and I think the numbers are growing. I really think the numbers are growing.
It's rich. I love hearing it. I'm so happy so many people have found God, come to Jesus and all of that, but it's again, I'm feeling it a little too, a little too gosh darn late.
Yes. Yes. A little too late, but it is only March of the first damn year of this thing, and we'll see what happens. Okay, but how about this? Locally, we it's not really related, but it kind of tells you something about the temperature, about, you know, rational versus irrational. There was a St. Patrick's Day parade on Sunday in Bayport, Blue Point, and a Confederate flag was flown from a truck on that day. Bayport Blue Point Chamber of Commerce President Carl Atwater confirmed this and said, "We deeply regret the disturbing display that occurred during this year's St. Patrick's Day parade. What happened today has never happened before, and we were unprepared." He said the parade committee did not have a protocol for this. "For that reason, we did not act as quickly as we should have. Once the information was relayed, we worked quickly during the parade to have the displays removed. Please be assured that this will never happen again." The flag was flying from a truck behind another truck with a flag for the fish store, according to a statement posted to the Bayport Seafood Market and Restaurant's Facebook page. "In no way, shape, or form do we support this flag or its meaning," the statement on that Facebook page said. "We apologize for any misunderstanding and anyone that was offended." Suffolk legislator Dominic Thorne, a Republican from East Patchogue, said he marched in the parade but was near the front and hadn't been aware of the Confederate flag incident until about noon on Monday. Typical elected officials finding out about things well after everybody else did. "I was not only surprised to hear this happen, but I wouldn't support anything that divides our county. There's no room for hate in our county." Now, what gets me about this story is the quickness and the uncompromising nature of the condemnation that happened. This wouldn't have happened, I don't think, a few years ago. I remember growing up, there were Confederate flags all over the place. It was cool. You know, people hung them on their walls. And now you do this kind of thing in a parade and you get roundly condemned and quickly. And credit to the Bayport Blue Point Chamber of Commerce for admitting your failings, saying, yeah, we didn't catch this. We didn't, we weren't prepared for this. We won't let that happen again. So that's the kind of thing that gives me some bit of hope in these troubled times. It's disturbing, must have disturbed a lot of people, but I'm heartened to know that other people get that and they're going to be keeping an eye out for this kind of nonsense, because this kind of nonsense is being encouraged by the people in charge now. And it's just one other battleground to fight this on. All right, you know, I want to read this the story that was in the New York Times, because it is so troubling. We touched upon what happened at Columbia University last week with the grabbing of someone in this country legally, basically disappeared. Nobody knew where he was. Turned out to be somewhere in Louisiana, trying to deport him because he was a pro-Palestinian activist. And apparently you can't do that anymore. It's madness, but you know what? It's only one element of the madness. The first knock at the door came 8 days ago on a Friday morning. Okay, this story is dated 2 days ago, so those numbers are going to be off. Three federal immigration agents showed up at a Columbia University apartment searching for Ranjani how do you pronounce S-R? I'm just going to pretend the R is not there. I can't do this. I'm sorry. Sinavazan. Yes, Ranjani Sinavazan, who had recently learned her student visa had been revoked. Ms. Sinavazan, an international student from India, did not open the door. She was not home when the agents showed up again the next night, just hours before a former Columbia student living in campus housing, Mahmoud Khalil, the person we talked about last week, was detained, roiling the university. Ms. Sinavazan packed a few belongings, left her cat behind with a friend, and jumped on a flight to Canada at LaGuardia Airport. When the agents returned a third time this past Thursday night and entered her apartment with a judicial warrant, she was gone. The atmosphere seemed so volatile and dangerous, she said on Friday in an interview with the New York Times, her first public remarks since leaving, so I just made a quick decision. Now, she is a Fulbright recipient who is pursuing a doctoral degree in urban planning. She was caught in the dragnet of President Trump's crackdown on pro-Palestinian demonstrators through the use of federal immigration powers. She is one of a handful of non-citizens that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency has targeted at Columbia in recent days. Now, in the weeks since that first knock on her door, she says she has struggled to understand why the State Department abruptly revoked her student visa without explanation, leading Columbia to withdraw her enrollment from the university because her legal status had been terminated. On Friday, while considering her future in Canada, she received some answers. The Department of Homeland Security issued a statement that characterized her as a terrorist sympathizer and accused her of advocating violence and being involved in activities supporting Hamas, a terrorist organization. The department did not provide any evidence for its allegations. Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary and well-known dog killer, thank you, posted surveillance hostage, I'm sorry, why did I go to that word? Surveillance footage on it looks similar, on social media that showed Ms. Sinavazan lugging a suitcase at LaGuardia as she fled to Canada. Secretary Noem celebrated her departure as a self-deportation. It is a privilege to be granted a visa to live and study in the United States of America, Secretary Noem wrote. When you advocate for violence and terrorism, that privilege should be revoked and you should not be in this country. Yeah, you know, it's good if you have actual evidence to support that. Now, Ms. Sinavazan's lawyers have vehemently denied those allegations and have accused the Trump administration of revoking her visa for engaging in protected political speech, saying she was denied any meaningful form of due process to challenge the visa revocation. And she is entitled to that, being in this country legally. Secretary Noem's tweet is not only factually wrong, but fundamentally anti-American, said one of her lawyers, adding, for at least a week, DHS has made clear its intent to punish her for her speech, and they have failed in their efforts. Now, in response to questions, officials with Homeland Security said that when she renewed her visa last year, she failed to disclose two court summonses related to protest on Columbia's campus. The department did not say how the summonses made her a terrorist sympathizer. I'm fearful that even the most low-level political speech, or just doing what we all do, like shout into the abyss at a social media, can turn into this dystopian nightmare where somebody is calling you a terrorist sympathizer and making you literally fear for your life and your safety. She said this in an interview on Friday. Now, her current situation can be traced back to last year when she was arrested at an entrance to Columbia's campus the same day that pro-Palestinian protesters occupied Hamilton Hall, which is a university building. She said she had not been a part of the break-in, but was returning to her apartment that evening after a picnic with friends, wading through a churning crowd of protesters and barricades on West 116th Street, when the police pushed her and arrested her. I can identify. I had the same thing happen to me, not nearly as serious, but you can easily get caught up by the cops in a crowd of people if you're just trying to walk down the street. She was briefly detained and received two summonses, one for obstructing vehicular or pedestrian traffic, and another for refusing to disperse. Her case was quickly dismissed and did not result in a criminal record. She said she never faced disciplinary action from the university, was in good academic standing. Her lawyer says she was taken in with roughly 100 other people after being blocked from returning to her apartment and getting stuck in the street. The court recognized this when it dismissed her case as having no merit. Ranjani was just trying to walk home. She said she did not disclose the summonses in the visa renewal form later in the year because her case had been dismissed in May, and she did not have a conviction, which is exactly what I would have done. She said, because I had not and the charges were dismissed, I sort of marked it as a no. But maybe that was my mistake. I would have been happy to disclose that, but just the way they had questioned us was sort of assuming that you had a conviction. And just that statement right there tells me she's telling the truth, because that's exactly how it goes. Of course. You weren't convicted.
Ah, yes. Case in point. I believe I touched on this in the first part of the hour. Yes, please ruin my life because, because politicians are too chicken doo-doo to do anything policy-wise to stop theocratic righteousness and lunacy bombing people. Yeah, like we have control over where they go if we are not listened to. Yeah, I'm going to go out in the streets and protest.
Okay, you did the same thing, Kyle. You made the same misassumption. She wasn't protesting. She was trying to walk home.
No, you can't.
Are we not even going to go into the streets anymore at all to walk around? Is that what you're saying?
No, but that's my point. Okay, yeah, fair. We can go into the streets, right. But that is exactly what happens. We know what happens. And that's our recourse. Mm-hmm. That's what our joyous freedom is, to go and get dragnet or kettled, like you pointed out, for the RNC. No, you can't even be alongside it or media covering it without getting tangled up.
Right.
And yes, my life being ruined, or our future prospects getting all tied up in court trying to defend your innocence, like actual innocence, when you're not participating, not even participating. It's incredibly frustrating. And that's why leadership, like, I'm just not qualified. I'm not qualified to be sympathetic to either side anymore. I feel it's all amoral.
Either side? What's the other side? That's democracy and freedom of speech?
Well, I think the polar political sides of that these issues, when they become binaries and extreme binaries, I just am not qualified to thread that needle. I don't have the patience for it. This was not taught in school. And this is another point. Mm-hmm. Universities are not stepping up and allowing it to be taught because of theocratic lunacy.
Well, look at what's happening to universities. They
exactly.
are being threatened. And, you know, I can't even imagine it must be like to run a university and be threatened every day by Trump. If you don't do this, we're going to cut all your funds off.
So how do we expect to have educated adults that can help guide policy and vote in informed ways?
You're not going to like it, but people power, basically Make them hear you.
Oh, right? Hashtags are going to teach me. Got it.
Oh, I'm not talking about social media. I'm talking about, you know, real life presence. If there ever was a time for that, it's now.
Well, maybe if we were less segregated and we had a little bit more, let's say, multiculturalism those danger words.
That's DEI. It sounds like, oh my God, Kyle, be careful. Be careful what you say there.
Big scary.
You're promoting woke.
Let's actually practice our pluralism. Let's actually be the kind of society we sit around and talk about.
All right, we're going to have to go to
a bunch of navel gazing.
We're going to have to go to an anti-woke class now. But let me finish this story because I want to get to this before
the
hour ends.
Be my guest.
By the way, you're listening to Off the Wall, which is supposed to be a meditation program. Where you feel a lot calmer going out than you did coming in.
I'm not calm!
Sometimes it has the opposite effect. otw@2600.com is our email address. And, of course, that's the number 2600. Don't try and spell that out. I don't know where it goes. Ms. Srinivasan said that her activity on social media had been mostly limited to liking or sharing posts that highlighted human rights violations in the war in Gaza. She said that she had signed several open letters related to the war, including one by architecture scholars that called for Palestinian liberation. I'm just surprised that I'm a person of interest, she said. I'm kind of a rando, like absolute rando, she said, using slang for random. And the New York Times had to point that out, which tells me, man, you guys are out of step.
That's crazy, because social media is supposed to be an extension of our liberty to be able to say and think and express ourselves however we want. And yet it is exhibit A when people want to come for you.
Not if you criticize Israel, though. That's the thing. And that's what we read last week, that criticizing Israel, according to Columbia University, is grounds for dismissal or all kinds of disciplinary action. It's
lunacy.
Scary. It's lunacy, yes.
Lunacy.
So it was March 5th when she received an email from the U.S. consulate in Chennai, India, indicating that her visa had been revoked. The notice did not provide a reason, saying only that information has come to light that may make her ineligible for a visa. So now, you know, this poor woman's on the run. She's in Canada now. Her academic career is in shambles. And why? Because she tried to walk home one night because she liked some posts or agreed with a petition calling for an end to the slaughter that Israel continues to perpetuate onto innocent people. Just last night, 400 more killed. We're not even talking against this anymore. It's just normal. You know, it's insane.
What ceasefire?
And people are afraid to criticize this. You know, people are afraid to say, wow, this is not what you should be doing. You know, and if you do dare to speak up, you become a terrorist sympathizer. It's so Orwellian, you know, it's so cut and dry, and yet it just keeps happening. And it keeps happening because we're not speaking loudly enough against it. We're not putting ourselves out there and saying, you know what, count me in too, because I don't think this is right. And we're seeing the victim. The first victims are the people who aren't citizens of this country. Do you think it's going to stop there? Do you think they are going to just attack people who have student visas or green cards and they're going to leave the rest of us? Of course they're not going to leave us alone. They'll find other things to come after. They'll get us fired from our jobs. They'll cancel our student loans or even our mortgages. They will do whatever it takes to get their way. And, you know, it's fairly early in the whole process. It's going to get a lot worse if people don't make their voices heard in a much, much louder way.
What would William Burroughs say?
I don't know, but I'd enjoy hearing it.
I would really love to hear, I want to just record myself for an hour just to get it off my chest, because I know this is a lot. It's very intense, the dynamic conversation here. But I don't get to say even a sliver of what I want. And then we roll right into extreme leftist or whatever, you know, crazy discussions ourselves, trying to defend things like guilt and morality. And it just doesn't do it justice. It's insanity.
I wish this was the end of the show, because that's the perfect ending to all this. It is insanity.
I'm sure there's a tool, an AI tool, you could get, a modern Burroughs poetry, like pulled from headlines or something. Somebody should do that.
Like sort of like a cameo for the dead.
Well, yeah, like conjure up in his style, but...
that would be cool, having Winston Churchill give like an answer machine message or something.
Just, and do like extreme stories from like left and right, like crazy polar politics.
This probably already exists because it's easy. It's easy for AI to do that. All right, I just want to finish with this other story, which I just saw before the show. But apparently, Doge, remember them, they've broken into the U.S. Institute of Peacebuilding. That is literally what the headline here is from the Associated Press. Yeah, those communists. they are banned from the White House because they won't say Gulf of America. And I guess NASA's next. Basically, the U.S. Institute of Peace, most of their board was fired, and the remaining three members of the group's board, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and National Defense University President Peter Garvin, fired the president and CEO George Moose on Friday, according to a document obtained by the AP. An executive order that Trump signed last month targeted the organization, which was created by Congress more than 40 years ago, and other organizations also for reductions. Current employees and staffers from Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency entered the building despite protests that the Institute is not part of the executive branch. USIP called the police, whose vehicles were outside the building on Monday evening. Now, USIP is a congressionally funded independent nonprofit that works to advance U.S. values in conflict resolution, ending wars, and promoting good governance. And that's why they have to go. Moose said Doge has broken into our building. He avowed legal action, saying what has happened here today is an illegal takeover by elements of the executive branch of a private nonprofit. He said the Institute's headquarters, located across the street from the State Department, is not a federal building. Speaking to reporters after leaving the building, Moose noted it was very clear that there was a desire on the part of the administration to dismantle a lot of what we call foreign assistance, and we are a part of that family. The Doge workers gained access to the building after several unsuccessful attempts Monday and after having been turned away on Friday. It's not immediately clear what the Doge staffers were doing or looking for in the building. And of course, the White House is characterizing this as USIP's non-compliance with Trump's order. And that is where we stand on that particular situation. This public service announcement, though, after our run-in with Twitter and Doge for helping to spread an employee directory with email addresses, we took it off our Twitter feed. However, we decided to host it ourselves, so Twitter had no control over what we did. And if you want to see it, if you want to see the partial list, we know there's more. The partial list of Doge employees, just simply go to www.2600.com/. Oh, you know what? I think slash Doge will work. I'm pretty sure it will. But if not, it will soon. Yeah, it might link to the actual image. So we can fix that, and we will. And that's going to pretty much do it for us here tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening. Please stay involved, and we'll see you next week. OTW at 2600.com. Good night.